Welcome, welcome to our yellow house. I actually have a guest with me, a very good friend of mine, Mr. Eric Martin.
Hey, hey.
And Eric is about, 1,500, 1,700 miles away. What is this show? What are we doing here?
I don't know. You tell me. We talked earlier this week and you were like, hey, I'm going to start a podcast and I have a name. Yeah. And I want you to be on it. And I said, okay. So it's the No Agenda agenda show.
Yeah. I mean, the best thing I can think of is I listen to Dan Benjamin and John Gruber, and they just sit there and talk about whatever the hell they want, and it works really well. And I said, I bet I could do that.
Yeah, I find it interesting that Dan went into the whole podcast network, racket. Not that it's a racket. I mean, it's obviously a very cool profession, but he seems to be really good at it. I haven't checked out but a couple of things. The stuff with Jason Ziffer, yeah. I think I've listened to much. Hopefully I pronounced Jason's last name correctly.
Well, we'll see. Hopefully he'll tune in and tell you if you're wrong.
Yeah.
But we've got our show notes here. It's a little tool called Etherpad. And there's the free version is called iEtherpad. So if you go to iEtherpad.com/OYH1 for our Yellow House 1, you will see the show notes for today. How many millions of people have watched a video of Ken Robinson on a TED video? All right. And then can we get all of those people in the world to sort of like enter a single global chat roulette, and then just, hey, let's talk about, and here's the current subject, this video by Ken Robinson, which just happened, or let's say that it's Hurricane Katrina, okay? Let's enter a chat roulette and talk about the oil spill, or the tsunami, or whatever next sort of disaster happens, instead of just sitting at home and watching some newscaster. Let's connect with another person, and maybe the person we're connecting with is directly affected. You know, I just lost my house. Please talk to me.
Have you ever heard of a TAZ?
I don't think so.
A temporary autonomous zone. I just posted the correct spelling. So basically, it's the idea that a bunch of people can arrive at one place, and it kind of forms a mini society for a small period of time, and that society is it's anarchy, right? There's no real leader. Burning Man's a really good example. Mm-hmm. Raves, a really good rave is kind of a TAZ where like there are no rules and no anything, but at the same time it runs and most people come together, you know, in a spirit of cooperation, obviously, or it wouldn't last. But as long as the fight did, but but what you're kind of describing is actually like a TAZ on the internet, and that's an idea that I think is worth exploring for sure. You know, that's kind of what 4chan kind of allows without without really the chat part. It's because it's all text, but you know, they don't keep logs or anything. Mm-hmm. And
I think more companies should have that stance that they don't keep logs, because it only just comes back to bite somebody in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
Like the red light cameras, you know, you see those and you're like, oh, okay, well, if you're thinking from the perspective of the government, this is a way for us to make more money, because the same number of people are breaking the law, whether the cameras are there or not. But now we can get them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it from the complete opposite perspective, you're invading my privacy. But then if you think about it from the perspective of someone who files a missing persons report, and they're a really good way to recognize faces, then you could say, ah, we found that missing person. They exist. It's okay. So it's just,
they just didn't want to come home.
You know, like there's so many different ways to bend that. But I believe that ultimately it cancels out to a negative number.
Well, they don't last, and that's the whole point, you know, because if it was permanent, then it wouldn't be very anonymous anymore, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. Does Chat Roulette have do they have an API?
That could be fun.
Yeah, you know.
I think, is the kid from Russia? Is that right?
I don't know. I have never even visited the site. I only know about it and some YouTube stuff. You know, I've seen it sort of in action. My friend did it, and they actually had kind of some fun with it. They put the lamp. They made turn all of the lights off, put a lamp on, and that was what was on screen. And they were just sort of off screen talking in booming voices, and they're like, "I am lamp." You know, and then people would interact with it and stuff, you know, and they were cracking up. I thought that was a pretty good, that was their first time, right? You know, and that's what they thought of. I was like, okay, I guess that's what it is. Everybody just, you know, trying something and whatnot. And I'm sure there are people who know how to use the system and are looking for, I don't know, other freaks and weirdos ready to play Star Wars or something.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, like, you know, if you can do instant video chat, you know, what about like what we used to do with Yahoo Games back in the 90s? You know, you go into the spades room and you say, "I want to play some spades," right? And that's literally, I mean, I spent hours of my days at high school just sitting in the computer lab.
Playing spades,
supposed to be building websites. Not really accomplishing much. Because Yahoo was there. And my girlfriend was in the next room, and I wanted to Yahoo IM with her. And
Yim.
You're a WordPress guy.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's hard, right? I mean, are you talking about the controversy, the recent controversy?
No, but we did talk about that a little bit today. You know, WordPress is GPL, right? And Matt Mullenweg has been on record many times saying that anybody who charges for something that's GPL is doing it wrong.
No, he's never said that, not at all. It essentially boils down to that. WordPress feels, and so does other big open source people, you know, CMS publishing platforms, Joomla and Drupal have both said this, that themes and plugins and modules and extensions to the software are derivative works, which means that they have to carry the GPL license. The GPL allows you to sell your work. You only have to pass on the rights that the GPL grants, which basically comes down to the source is free for modification, da 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 da, and they can, you know, fork it and do whatever, as long as it, again, remains GPL. But I use premium plugins and themes all the time, and they're all GPL. Woo Themes is a good example, and the Shop plugin is another good example. And they have, you know, the files themselves aren't free for the downloading. They're behind paywalls. You know, I had to pay $300 for a developer license, and it got me one convenience. Two conveniences. The shop lets me download betas early because I'm a developer, and I can also they have like a serial number. It's not really a serial number. It's like a license key that you stick in the admin. And it doesn't unlock the software or anything. It runs fine without it. But what it allows you to do is auto-upgrade from inside the WP admin. And I don't use that because I use source control. And I have, you know, bigger processes for managing, you know, the upgrades and things like that. But I'm sure it's convenient to somebody, you know. I don't do any of the auto-upgrades from the admin because I have source control to worry about. So I do it that way and do a deployment and that kind of thing. But he got into it, as he has been, like, once a year for the last 3 years with Chris Pearson, who wrote the thesis theme. And they went on some show, and Chris got kind of like, you know, I don't know, he didn't show well, and Matt has definitely slung some mud, but not on that show. He was very gracious, and he's just insistent that this is how the GPL should be interpreted, and that's kind of where the gray issue comes in, is that it's, you can look at it a bunch of ways. There's lots of sort of like, you know, these elaborate theoretical edge cases you can sort of create. You can even think about some of the, you know, some of the ways that themes and things interact and the APIs interact. And then, you know, they insist it's GPL. And you know, this is what's weird, why they're sort of at a deadlock, because it's essentially a philosophical difference. Because Chris, you know, is making money. He said something like 27,000. He sold 27,000 copies of Thesis, and mm-hmm. I think their basic price is like $87, and then they have a little bit more expensive one that's like the developer one that's like $119 or something. I these prices I'm just making up, but it, you know, so that means in the last 3 years or so, you know, he's made over $2 million selling this theme, and it hasn't been GPL the entire time, and of course it obviously hasn't hurt the evolution of WordPress either, you know, so. You have this thing where if either party was doing it or wasn't doing it, I don't think anything would change. If WordPress didn't, you know, didn't like keep talking about their GPL infringement, nothing would change. And if Chris licensed it as GPL, nothing would have to change either, you know. So that's why he doesn't think he has to do anything, and WordPress, you know, can't really make him do anything, and there may be a court case coming, but there was an interesting turn in the story, you know, that was that China changed what, if there was a court case, what it would even be about. And that's the fact that Thesis, the code was analyzed, and there are direct code lifted from the core project, which many of the developers, you know, are starting to go. Like, they're even tying specific pieces of code to revisions in the public SVN repository and things like that. And so now there's no question that it's a derivative. And, of course, Chris has now, of course, come out and said, oh, I'm going to rewrite all those pieces. But it's still going to interact with it. And I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know. It's as these have gone on, the more my faith in... I guess it's not really my faith. The GPL has problems, has lots of problems, and it's nice, and it has a very idealistic turn into it. It was actually, I was talking with this with Joe Stump on Twitter, and he said something that kind of rang for me, or, you know, it stuck out for me. And he's like, if it was truly free, it wouldn't matter what Chris did with it. And that kind of hit me. I was like, I can't argue with that, number one. I mean, because it does come with some restrictions.
Yeah.
Of course, the restriction is that it has to remain free and, you know, and in the same sort of, and you have to pass on the same rights that you've been passed on.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a copyright, you know, discussion too, which I also am not, it's not that I don't respect copyright. I just think that copyright is used as a blunt instrument against.
Yeah, copyright, you know, itself is kind of crap.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that, you know, you're using something I made for a number of reasons, you know, and I can think of a few that are very, very pointed. It could be considered, you know, As law abiding, God fearing people, don't we have some rights? You know what I mean? Like, are you able to take something I said and misrepresent me as a person, and therefore I lose my job? Right? There's protection against libel and slander, and I think whether or not that enters into copyright law is one thing, but then there is, hey, I painted this great painting, and then somebody came along, copied it. I was selling it for $100. He comes by, sells it for $95. And it's something that I created. It's
yeah, I mean, and that's sort of, that's definitely like Chris Pearson's, you know, argument is that, you know, I put a lot of work into this and a lot of marketing, and a lot of money and that kind of thing. And, you know, and I've turned this into a business and I don't want, obviously, my business to end.
But isn't he the guy that's selling it for $5 less? Even though the first one was technically free?
Yeah, I mean, and that's sort of the idea is that if he had to give the GPL, then people could fork it and pirate it and do all this stuff. And the thing is that there's not evidence that people do that. I mean, the thesis theme is being stolen now with a proprietary license. You know, kind of, again, it's like nothing would change if either party changed their position, you know, and agreed to give it up. And that therein lies the problem, you know. So, because it's almost like unresolvable by definition.
Well, here's my question. Is the source still available? Like, is it all obfuscated?
No, the source is available. You know, so I mean, he's obviously compliant a little bit. He doesn't release it under that. And the other thing about the themes is that the CSS, JavaScript, and I guess pure HTML is not a derivative work. You know, those things are whole creations that are separate from the project, obviously. And you can dual license it so that those assets are under whatever license you want. And the PHP code is all that's being asked to be open source, you know, and to remain open source. You know, so he thinks that if, you know, people can fork it, they'll undercut him, you know, or which means that he'd have to compete for support, you know, and provide the better support, you know, so that people pay them more money, innovate on features and things like that. And, you know, if he's got a good thing going, I don't know how long what his development cycles look like or how often he releases new features or what, you know, the difference between 1.6 and 1.8 is or anything.
Here's a completely seemingly unrelated example. Mm-hmm. Do you know these rubber bands that little kids wear around their wrists?
Yeah, I saw them. I saw some ad for it. You know what I saw? I saw them on Woot was selling like 5,000 of them for $3 or something.
So they're called silly bands. And okay. I believe the official spelling is with a Z at the end of bands.
Oh, of course. It's the hip young thing, you know?
Right. So, and it's, I think it's popular amongst kids that are maybe like 6 through 12. And then at a certain point, you just, you know what I mean? It's, mm-hmm. it's for that age group. But there are tons of knockoffs and it would be really hard to enforce the copyright or, you know, like put some sort of a signature onto a rubber band because it's so thin. So there are tons and tons of knockoffs and you can't really tell one from another. But at the same time, the company who originally makes silly bands is cleaning up still, mm-hmm. despite all of the competition.
Yeah.
So I really wonder what this guy is afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, thesis, right? I mean, we're 3 years. What is it? So you said 3 years
at least,
into it?
Yeah, I think it's. I'm pretty sure it's at least 3 years. This is not the first time that this has gone around, and every time both sides are. It's like a big Mexican standoff, and I mean it. It definitely can hurt the community. I know people who have left over the last one, and you know, I have friends and people who you know, contractors that I bring in all my projects, and that they're. I mean, some of them are thesis users. I don't use it personally. I don't have a license with it. I use K2, you know, because I helped develop it and, you know, and a variety of other things. But, you know, he likes it and he's like, really, I just using a theme I like, you know, he feels caught in the crossfire, you know, a lot more than I do. And I'm more like, it's got a lot of problems, but we're stuck with GPL. It's kind of like the EULA that, or the, you know, the agreement with Apple with, you know, not, basically banning Flash and other, you know, other things from their app store. Mm. It's an incredibly marketable and profitable ecosystem. You just got to play by their rules, and their rules suck, and they're all weird and all over the place. And it's pretty much the same, you know, here. There are rules to the GPL, and the spirit of it is pretty well agreed upon, mostly. And the letter of it is unclear to even the most discerning eyes, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you think about it that way, well, it's the WordPress playground, and you got to play in it regardless of you know, the GPL and what it is or what it's supposed to stand for and protect and things like that. If it's from that standpoint, then I don't really feel Chris has been that great of a community member. And his little video, he's been publishing videos on his website, but the one with Matt was quite telling of his personality and how he sort of approaches life. Yeah. And you know, it wasn't, I don't think it was the best thing for him. But he's got his fans, and he's got his troops that believe what he believes, and you know, then he's got the people on the other side of the fence and what they believe, and you know. But at the end of the day, it's like, I don't know, it's not gonna be resolved it won't even be resolved with a court case. Like, even if it went to court, right now it looks more like it would be a copyright, you know, just a clear copyright case, and the GPL wouldn't really be tested all that much. But if the GPL was tested in this instance, I don't think it would, even if you know, regardless of who won, it would be a huge distraction, a huge drain of time and energy and money on both sides. And, you know, I just have this nightmare that somehow, you know, the judge would make a ruling that we would have some kind of case precedent. And even if it was interpreted like favorably and, you know, for the GPL, it could still like create sort of this weird temporal zone. And definitely, you know, lots of lawyers would probably, you know, see dollar signs and create a cottage industry about testing the GPL all over the place. Mm. The next thing you know, we have all these holes in it and all these weird sort of like tests and stuff that don't really make a lot of sense in every application. And of course, then once you get one case precedent, even if it was a savvy, technology savvy judge, and he, you know, explained some things and kind of set out a framework, you get another guy who can barely, you know, find the home row on his keyboard, you know, and then he interprets it faulty and it just breaks it down. And next thing you know, I think it would be bad for open source licenses in general. And you kind of go back to it's more of a, it could be kept, let me put it this way, it could be kept gentlemanly, and you could sort of see that there's this spirit that, you know, what gets created with it should remain open, but there are still lots of ways to make money in open source support and, you know, and all this other stuff, you know. And the people who play inside the GPL playground get, you know, promoted by the project and get talked about favorably, and you know, and there's some people who, like, since they've gone GPL, they've made more money, you know, or at least their sales didn't slow down or anything like that. They didn't see like this huge piracy, because people will come back if you're offering stuff and people want to support. They realize that, you know, you're a good, you know, you're providing value for them. And I mean, most of these are one-time purchases anyway. You get like I think Woo Themes, it's, you pay some amount of money and you're like lifetime access forever, mm-hmm. every theme they release. And they release, you know, I don't know, let's say 6 new themes a year. And they kind of, you know, that whole market caters to sort of the bloggers that may know a little bit of HTML and CSS, but, you know, but they tweak their blog and install and configure plugins, and, you know, they like to tinker with their website. And
yeah,
this is an outlet for them. And there's lots of designers too that'll go there and like build off of their work and stuff. And
well, you know, if you are interested in hearing more about this whole GPL stealing stuff, is it stealing? Can it be defended in court? There's a great episode of the Floss Weekly show done by Randall Schwartz, who is sort of a Uber Perl guru, written several books and, you know, travels all over the world doing these open source conventions. And a guy named Bob Jacobson, who was involved with writing software that controls model trains.
Oh, man, that's cool. Riley's really into trains, my son.
Oh, yeah?
He's into trains big time, but we don't have any electric ones yet.
Well, apparently, if you ever get in the electric trains, you have to get JMRI. It's a Java toolkit for like driving your train. On this episode, he actually talks about how he went to court for like 6 years or something like that, and essentially defending his software license because somebody copied and pasted huge chunks of his code and was trying to sell it and was doing it the wrong way. It's very interesting. Listen, it's probably about an hour long, but worth your time if you're interested in this.
Stuff in there?
Oh, yeah. I think so. The description here doesn't say anything about GPL, but yeah. It's pretty brief.
Oh, okay. I'll have to find where it is so I can.
This was about 3 or 4 months ago that I listened to it, but I'll put a link to this in our show notes so everybody can go check it out.
When you put that in, did you want to talk about the GPL or did you were talking about the new WordPress 3?
That wasn't really what I wanted to talk about.
It's been on my mind.
It's definitely big news. I mean,
it is. I mean, it's important because it's important to explore because there's so much to question about it, and at the same time, it's so clear, and that's what makes it such a conundrum. So, I don't know. I know. Let me put it this way: out of everything, you know, because a lot of smart people are kind of not really anti-GPL, but they think that the license has problems. And have you ever seen the MIT license? Have you ever read it?
No, I can't say I have.
It's super simple, and it's very straightforward. And, of course, it's like, you know, everything's free to be free. It's just free.
Well, yeah, with no viral. It's very, I mean, just MIT in and of itself is a great place, but I know that the license is, it's one of the more popular licenses.
Mm-hmm. And I can see why. And out of this whole controversy, because every time this comes up, you do a lot of research because you're commenting on it and that kind of thing. And you don't want to seem like like an asshole. So you start to look some things up and you're like, you want to make this point, but am I being biased or am I actually speaking the truth? And, you know, so every time I've gotten a little bit closer to understanding and appreciating it. Now I'm at a point where, like, if I release something that isn't a GPL project, I think I'm going to be choosing the MIT license.
And for sure.
The BSD license is pretty open too. They used to have a weird, annoying advertising clause where like you always had to mention, you know, Berkeley, but they eventually wrote that out of it and stuff because it had gotten to the point where there were like a million colleges
their own Apache where you actually have to, it's sort of like Creative Commons attribution where you have to mention the person who made it, but you don't necessarily have to like, you know.
I was thinking about the Apache one because I went to go read it and it's like a super long legalese document and you look at their list of projects and does anybody that isn't, like their project isn't a part of the Apache Foundation, do they use the Apache license? Like, I know it's an open license, but I think all the projects are Apache projects.
That could be true. Well, no, I mean, I think somebody else must use Apache. I wonder if Google Code supports it. Because if Google Code supports it, then probably it's popular enough that a lot of people use it.
No, that's a drop down. I think they just support they have it every license.
But Google Code only supports things that are OSI approved.
That's what I mean. You know, so all the OSI approved ones are just in there, regardless if Apache would, you know, be one that people would pick. But I'm sure there is software out there and maybe a listener can point me to one, but you know, it just dawned on me because they have a crap load of projects, more than I even thought.
They really do, yeah.
And then you hear about stuff, you realize they are an Apache project, but you never, you know, you don't call it like Apache Cassandra, you know, or right. Apache Lucene or anything like that. You just, Apache is the web server, you know, and it's Apache web server and everything grew out of that, but you sort of miss the association there, so. And I can't even think of what the gist of that one is. And, you know, there's some other ones. I don't know. But MIT, it's clean, it's short, it does what it does. And the other thing, and this is sort of at the The last thing I'll say about GPL and stuff is jQuery is dual licensed GPL and MIT. And I don't know what the dual licenses cover, or how that even works or why they did it. I mean, I think the GPL part is in there because of the viral nature of something they combine themselves with. And MIT license is compatible, I think. No, I don't know. I won't even say that. But so now I want to look at what the
dual. I know one of the reasons why John decided to dual license was because of Drupal project. They really wanted to include jQuery as part of Drupal, but Drupal is so GPL religious. You can't include something on the Drupal server unless it's GPL.
Wow.
Any file that you download. So it's a big deal, but it also prevents them from ever having to go back like years and years later and get all these long, lists of signatures from people and say, yes, you can use my code. Yes, you can use my code. It's like, if it's not GPL, we're kicking it off. And I've heard about projects that had to like relicense or to gain a license in the first place. And it just seems like a headache.
Yeah, well, that's why WordPress and all those projects, they're stuck with GPL and the version they're on, because it would take 1,000 people to vote it up, and get approval from it. Could it be done? Yes. What was the famous story? Somebody went around and got every single license signed over so that they could. I think it was Randall Schwartz on Floss, actually, was talking about it one time, and they did it for Smalltalk. Or some other package he was involved in, and it was a bunch of people. But it wasn't 1,000. It was like maybe 100, and they eventually got. There was a big group of them they could find easily, but it eventually tracked down the last guy. And once they did that, they could actually change the license. And they wanted to do it, I guess. And it meant that much. It became a priority. But with WordPress, it's too big of a monster. It's been around too long. And because it's so easy to hack, there's a lot of patches that have come in from a lot of different people,
Yeah, I mean, on my list was WordPress 3, but I feel like if we start talking about that, it'll be like next week before we're finished.
Yeah. Plus, I just retweeted the talking about GPL and WordPress hashtags. So now we have to release this. now it's on been posted up on
it's official.
Yeah, it's official. It's been put on the internets, or at least the promise of said conversation. So but it could go forever, and it's an important topic.
And I'm glad we talked about it. If anybody hears something weird, that's my cat trying to eat the microphone.
How many do you guys have right now?
We have three. We're actually not cat people. Well, I wanted a cat so that I could have something warm and cuddly without having to really have to take care of something all day long like a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And my girlfriend has two cats just because she inherited them. And she could never give them away or put them to sleep or anything. I mean...
Are they licensed under the GPL too?
If cats were GPL, how would the world be different? We don't need to leave. We don't need to answer that.
They're all derivative works of Lion-O.
Sight beyond sight.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned Freelancer, and there's this just fantastic book that was written almost 10 years ago by a really amazing author, Daniel Pink. You know any Daniel Pink?
No, I'm looking at the Amazon page now.
So he actually used to be a speechwriter for Al Gore while he was in the White House.
Okay.
Uh-huh. As the VP.
I've heard his name.
He tells the story in the beginning of this book, Free Agent Nation, where he basically quits his job because he's too stressed out. And doesn't really skip a beat, just instantly like calls up this magazine and calls up this newspaper and just starts writing and getting paid to write. And you know, that act of becoming what he calls a free agent, because he's trying to find a word that's not too overloaded in the arena of knowledge work.
Mm-hmm.
It can encompass the one person entrepreneurial effort, as well as the idea of the subcontractor. You know, it's a little bit bigger than freelancer. It's a little bit bigger than solopreneur. Free agent, and it's a great book.
I should get it, because that's sort of where I'm at right now. Is I kind of bring people in to sort of like do a few things for me, and I haven't really got like an integrated team. So I'll collaborate with like one-offs, you know, on various projects, but I haven't really brought all the subcontractors in on the same thing, really. A couple projects we've done that with, you know, it depends on the project, but but I also kind of like that it's ad hoc, that, okay, I need a designer, I need, you know, a front end guy, and then I'll do the code, or I need a coder, and I'm going to, you know, and I'll handle doing something else in front of something.
And my biggest problem is, you know, I think having employees is not a bad thing overall, but if I have employees, that means if I can't bring in work, two people starve.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been able to get past that yet.
Yeah, it's a process. I mean, you know, I had a partner for a while, and it worked out. I mean, you just basically, it just comes down to this. And if I worked with somebody else, it would look a lot like this. If both of you are busting your ass and splitting everything down the middle, then you shouldn't be, you know, you can't help but make money, you know? And then, you know, you just get the right projects and the right clients, and you keep kind of working at it and stuff. But it's a stop and start type of thing, you know, this and that kind of thing. But I'm kind of wanting to kind of get the team working together, because I want to see what the next thing is. And if I could free up my hands with the client work, or of the client work, you know, and help other freelancers, you know, have really great projects and really great clients, because I'm really good about attracting good clients and working with amazing people and on neat things that people actually want to build. And so I can focus on my own efforts, you know, my other projects, like, you know, music and, you know, some of the other website and app ideas and stuff that I have. You know, and I never seem to have enough time for it, because I'm always on someone else's deadline, building someone else's dream. But, you know, the idea of being independent, you know, is still valuable enough to, you know, fight through the stress and try to figure out how to try to grow it, you know, and how to try to, you know, work the way I want and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, well, cool. It's on my wish list now.
Awesome. Yeah, the last thing I love about this book is, you know, he mentions meetups, which was still kind of a new idea of meeting people from the internet who you had something in common with. Back in the early 2000s, it was a pretty new idea. Mm-hmm. But he also predicts the idea that there will be, you know, these...
co-working spaces?
Co-working spaces, the you know... the Elks Lodge for free agents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've got all these people that are now not in a traditional job, where do they hang out? And they're going to need that third place, quote unquote. So
May 2002.
He doesn't go into it, but he predates the co-working movement by about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. I mean, 2002 is when first edition was dropped.
So I almost wonder if Brad Neuberg was like holding this book and said, we need to have a hat factory, or if it just sort of happened independently. You know?
I mean, it could happen, but probably not. I mean, this seems kind of like the book, because the, you know, 2002 was like just after, I mean, that was sort of as...
It was right in the burst, I mean.
Yeah, it was kind of right, I mean, like, the burst was, like, it was really bad. I mean, we were on the other side of, you know, like, if it was a curve, we were going downhill by 2001.
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, you know, the tragedy happened, after that, 2002 would have been the looking up, you know, just starting to figure it out. But a lot of people made a lot of money during that. And even if their company failed, you know, we had a lot more tech-savvy people with money in their pocket, you know. And what we're seeing now is what seems to be a bit more sustainable sort of activity, you know, around this stuff, and seeing a lot of solo people and not just, you know, kind of like the client work and the service-based kind of freelancer stuff. You're seeing people who are, you know, sometimes their first job is their own, you know, solopreneur venture. You know, a lot of them are doing it in college and stuff. It's pretty awesome. You know, I mean, I've been at this for 7 years, and it was hard at first, but I can't think of any other way to live my life, you know, and design it and lay it out the way I want to. So,
well, awesome. And hopefully Chicago will be a better place with you in it.